From Erie to Shamokin, Port Allegheny to Elizabethtown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, rapper Jay-Z and black pastors are rallying behind the need to give parents and students more freedom to choose a school which works best for them. David Taylor and Stephen Bloom are here with a Capitol Watch discussion. And like petulant children, the left throws a temper tantrum every time it doesn't get its way. I'll have a town hall commentary on the left's protest culture. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Larry Krasner, the George Soros-backed district attorney in Philadelphia, suffered a defeat in Commonwealth Court when the judges upheld a law that requires the state attorney general to appoint a special prosecutor to handle crimes on Philadelphia's mass transit system. Krasner is noted for his soft-on-crime policies that are being blamed by many for the rise in crime and violence in the city. In the wake of the decision, Attorney General Michelle Henry appointed Philadelphia lawyer Michael Untermeyer as a special prosecutor to handle those cases. Krasner is vowing to appeal the decision to the state Supreme Court, which has been a sympathetic venue for progressive causes. Speaking of Philadelphia, the city's school district has lost over 18,000 students over the past decade, but it hasn't cut spending despite having far fewer students to educate. The school district has approved a $4.5 billion budget for the coming fiscal year, which features an $88 million deficit. The hold harmless policy that prevents adjusting state funding downward when enrollment drops is one of the key drivers of inequity in the state's public school funding formula. Hillary Clinton famously referred to conservative Republicans as, quote, a basket of deplorables. But Democratic Congressman Chris DeLugio, who represents a suburban Pittsburgh district, has done her one better, calling such voters, quote, a horde of budding blood and soil fascists, end quote. Called out on the comment, DeLugio doubled down once again, calling supporters of former President Donald Trump fascists. DeLugio is locked in a tight reelection battle with State Representative Rob Mercury in what is considered to be one of the more competitive congressional districts in the state. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. A socialist state senator declared school choice to be the province of, quote, white Christian nationalists. But rapper Jay-Z and black pastors across the state are rallying to give students in underperforming government schools the freedom to choose other educational options. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capitol Watch discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and great to be here with you, David.
Great to be with you, too. So we're going to give our friends here listening on the airwaves another snootful of what's going on in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA. So we're looking down the barrel of another constitutional deadline for the general fund budget, which is supposed to be on the 30th of June. But from the sounds of it, Steve, it seems like there's the pace of operations, the op level is not approaching what would be necessary to get the budget done in time.
Well, certainly we're keeping an eye on all the latest information from the Capitol and around the Capitol on the budget situation. It appears to me as we are sitting here in the studio today that there is some discussion going on between the different caucuses, the Republicans in the Senate, the Democrats in the House, mm-hmm. the governor's people. Conversations, perhaps, but not actual hardcore negotiations yet.
Right.
And this yet is, I mean, we're talking about June 30th is almost here.
Correct.
And so what we're hearing in terms of just the vast majority of lawmakers that I've spoken to and my team has spoken to, whether they're representatives or senators, they're all suggesting that the budget's going to be late this year.
Mm-hmm.
Those range from July 2nd or 3rd to September to August, literally to December. I mean, we've heard some people think that they're going to do a lame duck session to do a budget in December of this year or November of this year after the elections, rather. And so it's anybody's guess, but it does appear that there is not so far a robust, serious, negotiated deal between those three main players at the budget table, which is, again, the governor, of course, the Democrats who control the House by a one vote margin, and the Republicans who control the Senate. And those are the three main parties. The other the other minority caucuses, they have a small voice at the table, but their real voices are those three. And that's what we're watching and trying to encourage, that the principles of sound budgeting end up in whatever deal is reached, including fiscal responsibility, regulatory reform, the things that actually will help us move forward, tax decreases rather than tax hikes, making sure that we're providing educational freedom for our parents across the Commonwealth in terms of where their child gets educated, and making sure it fits their desires and the abilities and potential of the child.
And, you know, and I know the listeners have heard me say this before, but it bears repeating. Pennsylvania has a structural budget deficit, which means that mandatory spending is increasing faster than the natural rate of growth in revenues from the growth of the economy. This is driven in large part by our demographics, which is that Pennsylvania has a growing population of senior citizens, people who are beyond their working years, and people who in many instances require taxpayer-funded services, and that we don't have enough of the younger folks who are in their working years, in their prime, paying taxes in. So the question becomes, well, then how do we shift that? And so, you know, you hear the governor talking about all of his spending plans with shiny trinkets that he's going to shower on us with the reserves that we have. That the in my mind, the only proper spending outputs would be to change that dynamic. How do we bend the curve to create more jobs, to bring more people in their prime years, to be part of that growing tax base, which then closes that structural budget deficit gap?
And it's no mystery. We see the states where people from Pennsylvania are fleeing to.
Yes.
The places that people are leaving Pennsylvania to go to because they feel they have better opportunity there. And there are states like Florida, like North Carolina, like Arizona, places where they have a low tax structure that isn't particularly burdensome compared to other states, places where regulation has not run amok, and places where there's educational freedom, where kids can get a good education no matter what their zip code.
And you mentioned the sunshine state of Florida, and I've got to say that the Governor Ron DeSantis made an announcement recently, and it's just in Pennsylvania terms, it's unthinkable. In Florida this year, the state government will spend in absolute dollars less than it spent the year prior. Like, I mean, during my time in Harrisburg, I've seen the state budget go from under $20 billion to what is it now? It's
45 or so.
I mean, it's crazy. But that Governor DeSantis has been very strong, with a lot of help from, strong majorities of his party in both chambers. But the political will to actually hold the line and not allow government to grow faster than the economy, to let that virtuous cycle kick in, that Governor DeSantis has actually paid down a full third of all Florida publicly held debt during his time in office. And I mean, I know that may sound like esoteric or kind of, you know, nerdy to folks listening, but like the total amount of taxpayer held debt in Florida has been reduced by one third just during the 6 years of this one governor. And if we had that kind of approach in Harrisburg, and those, in my opinion, are the kinds of metrics that you should be tracking. You know, what is the percentage change growth in GDP? What is the overall per capita debt burden held by citizens of our Commonwealth. Because, you know, I mean, Steve, people can leave. And when they do, the debt stays here. And so this is another reason why we want to have a strong economy, creating opportunities that keep people here or and also draw people here so that we can have, as I said, more of those folks who are in their prime productive years to build their lives and their careers and their families and their futures here so that they can be part of that growing tax base that then closes that gap and puts us in positive territory again.
And we talk about fiscal policy here, and it's not the most exciting subject to discuss. It's not one of those hot political topics that people are going down to their local town hall with a sign to yell and jump around about. But it is what the actual citizens recognize when they see opportunity. They say, hey, I can get a good paying job. I can buy an affordable house. I can send my kids to a school that works for them, mm-hmm. where they can be very successful mm-hmm. and be better prepared for their future. So that I don't know that the citizens are typically thinking, oh, I want good fiscal policy
right.
and getting into all those
right.
those technical
reasons.
But you
do want the results
of
the fiscal policy.
But they want the results, and they are not stupid. They understand, absolutely, this is a place where I can have a good life for a reasonable cost and open up more and more options for my family to be successful in the future. That's what draws people, and that's what the underlying good fiscal policy generates.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. And so this is the process that we're involved with. And I hope that, you know, that you have at least some of the players at the table who are, you know, mindful of these kinds of concerns. Senator Pittman from Indiana County, the majority leader in the Senate, he's said a lot of, you know, encouraging things. And in general, I would just say that Senator Pittman is a very level-headed fellow. And certainly that the top lady over there, that State Senator Kim Ward from Westmoreland County, that she's going to stick to her guns no matter what. But I wonder, you know, how much of what Governor Shapiro is asking for, how much of that does he really want? Or whether he just wants to be able to say that he asked for it or leave the impression that he tried, or I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, going back to fiscal policy, there is money in the bank account right now in Pennsylvania. The reserves have been filled back up to a reasonable level, the rainy day fund, and we're in a position where, yes, if a government so decided, if the House and Senate pass a bill that the governor signs to spend all that money, it could be spent. There is money sitting there right now. But the problem is that if it's spent now, it's gone. And that structural deficit you talked about is within 2 or 3 years going to drive us to the point where either taxes have to be raised or things have to be drastically cut. And we know how difficult it is for government to cut things. So the key is they're going to just increase taxes.
Right.
And that's the future we look at if, in fact, the spending levels that Governor Shapiro has talked about are achieved. The governor and the House Democrats want to spend a lot of money, mm-hmm. a significant portion of those reserves we talked about. And so really it's the bulwark of the senators you mentioned, the Republican Senate, that has been negotiating for the opposite. If we have too much money in the bank accounts, it shouldn't be just willy-nilly spent on new government programs that are going to end up having carrying costs well into the future. It should be refunded to the people who created that wealth, the taxpayers themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's really the fundamental argument that you see at the negotiation table. Spend, 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 or invest in the future and make sure that the citizens are the first ones to get a return if, in fact, there's too much money in
yeah.
state coffers.
No, I thought that was a good move and a very appropriate counterpoint, that the default position should not be always that government takes more and more and more. Government gets bigger. It takes more control of our economy, our society. It takes more money out of the private sector and more for itself. That it's just deeply unhealthy. And, you know, that's one of the common things that I notice is I don't encounter many lawmakers who have any kind of healthy respect for like an upper limit of how much government should take. That it's kind of like whatever, like however much we can get away with, that's what we're going to do.
Right. And that's not the ideal model. And obviously we at the Commonwealth Foundation certainly work on advocating for fiscal responsibility. And that's why, because if it weren't for the voices of the public, like Commonwealth Foundation, the Manufacturers Association, all those other, I guess, economically minded interests that come to the table around the budget and generally, we would see a spending spree.
Yeah.
So we have to remain vigilant. And there are excellent representatives and senators who do understand that. And they have chosen to be legislative champions, and, and they make a difference. And you know, it just always helps to remind people, if you're listening to the show and you're concerned about the fiscal future of Pennsylvania, go ahead and contact your legislator.
Yes, please.
Because they want to hear the voice of the citizens, and it's that can often buck them up and encourage them.
Yes. Choose to live life with your brain turned on. Please exercise your citizenship. And yes, know who your lawmakers are, know where they stand on things, and make sure that you make your voice heard so that they know that somebody's watching. You know, again, that as I always say, that representative state government is not a spectator sport. And again, there are also issues that can only be solved in Harrisburg with our, you know, with our federal republic, that state sovereignty is very consequential, and that, you know, you see this with the sort of the laboratory of democracy, that different states take, different approaches to different issues. And certainly that's the larger context of the battle for empowering parents and helping kids to get out of bad schools and to get better opportunities. What have we seen in other states across the country when it comes to school choice, scholarships, charter schools, all those kinds of options?
We're seeing a tremendous increase in opportunities for children to have more than just one choice, more than just you must go to the zip code assigned school or you can't go to school at all. Like that, that's not the one size fits all approach is starting to fade away. And we're seeing that mostly in the red states right now, the more conservative states, states like, again, we mentioned North Carolina, we'd mention Arizona, we mentioned Florida.
Mm-hmm.
There are some of the ones that are making really positive steps to empower parents to choose an educational setting that their kids can thrive in. It's tougher in a purple state like Pennsylvania,
right?
But we've had school choice in one form or another since the early 2000s, and those programs have grown steadily over the last two decades. We're to the point now where about 75% of our students still attend the local district zip code assigned school.
Mm-hmm.
The other 25% are pursuing other options. Some a parochial school, some private school, some charter schools, some cyber charter schools, some who homeschool. But we're seeing the mix really change. It's the highest it's ever been right now in terms of the percentage of students that aren't just being automatically sent to the local zip code assigned public school.
Well, this is so critical for so many different reasons. I mean, certainly the taxpayer expenditure on public K through 12 is in Pennsylvania is very substantial, and that, you know, we're talking about, you know, what is fiscally prudent? How do we right size state government? And, you know, I've always said that until and unless we get the full value out of the dollars already being spent, that we're going to continue to lose that battle. Because, I mean, education spending is such a big part of overall state spending, of course, in partnership with the localities. But also, you know, Steve, going back to something that you said about, you know, competitiveness, like where people want to be to build their lives and their families and their futures, and having a quality educational option when you don't happen to be a wealthy person and you can't pay your taxes and pay for tuition, that the states that there's a, how can I say it the right way? It's almost like there's a corresponding dynamism that the states that are the high performing, high growth states are the ones that you see adopting these kinds
They're attracting the most, they're attracting the students and families that are looking to get the most out of their education.
Yes.
Which is many of the parents in this whole state, in this country. So
yes.
We want our kids to thrive, and they're choosing to go to places where they can get a great education that works. And oh, by the way, often it includes technical aspects that aren't found in that zip code assigned public school that you may be enrolled in if you don't have a choice.
Right.
So we know there's a whole sector of the economy that's desperate for good quality workers who are well educated and can do the tough technical jobs.
Yeah.
And in many cases, they're left behind. The people who would naturally want to flow into that work are left behind because their school doesn't offer any kind of training.
Yes, and it's interesting because the non-traditional schools, the school choice schools, the charters and the cyber charters, that they are more dynamic because they're more flexible. And so that there are options that they can present that the regular public schools haven't thought of or haven't been motivated to adopt. And in fact, I'm involved with Reach Cyber Charter School, a statewide school here in Pennsylvania, and that our school just graduated the first 6 students from our virtual carpentry program.
Yes.
Working with the Carpenters Union and their apprenticeship curriculum that we, you know, each student who enrolled in the program got a, you know, big crate of lumber and tools. And again, these young people, God bless them, they're pioneers. They've proven that this model can work.
It isn't that the studies of technical fields are somehow less optimal or less worthy than a traditional academic education. This is part of offering a full range of options to students. And again, you're seeing it in other states where the people are going when they're leaving Pennsylvania to move their families and make their investments and grow their lives. So we've got to compete. We can't stand to just continue to lose people year after year to other states when we have the opportunity to change things.
And the only way we get there is with accountability, which is why these education reforms are so critical, because by empowering parents and having the money follow the kid, there is a kind of accountability for the, you know, let's say it, the sclerotic, stagnant, conventional physical public school districts. They've done the same thing over and over. They don't have enough incentives to change and reform. Steve, it's always great to visit with you. Thank you for being here and talking with me and the listeners. Where can people go to learn more about you and what you do?
CommonwealthFoundation.org on the internet.
Outstanding. And as always, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Steve and me, thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. As a father and grandfather, I am familiar with the tendency of very young children to throw temper tantrums when they don't get what they want. For the most part, they soon grow out of that stage and learn how to handle denial and disappointment in a more mature manner. The American left, however, appears to be stuck in that early stage of immaturity. The problem they face is their policy prescriptions are a failure. From the economy to foreign affairs to social policy, the socialist bent of the left has, as it has throughout all of history, been a complete disaster. Unable, therefore, to make any cogent intellectual argument, the left has turned to protest as its go-to tactic. Professional agitators, flush with cash from left-wing donors, stoke the fires, sometimes literally, of any real or perceived transgression. With the notable exception of the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol building, the right generally avoids protests, especially violent protest. For example, the conviction of former President Donald Trump by a kangaroo court in New York on made-up charges did not see MAGA supporters flood the streets, overturn police cars, and burn buildings. The left, however, is willing to stage protests at a moment's notice. Armed with the knowledge that the legacy news media will report their antics as peaceful protests, they freely violate the law. The most violent protest swept the nation in the wake of the George Floyd killing, in which cities across America were set ablaze. Most recently, the left has been in high dudgeon over Israel's efforts to wipe out the terrorist group Hamas, which conducted a raid last October that resulted in over 1,100 Israelis killed and hundreds taken hostage. Hamas continues to hold over 100 hostages, including, by the way, 8 Americans. Israel has rightfully demanded the release of all hostages as part of any settlement of the conflict. The refusal of Hamas to accede to that demand has prevented a negotiated end to the fighting. Despite the clear history of atrocities committed by Hamas and the attack of October 7th, the left has somehow decided that Israel is the enemy and is demanding an end to military operations in Gaza. This is the left's latest excuse for endless protests. spurred on by professional agitators, protest encampments blossomed on college campuses across the nation. Anti-Israel protesters continued to harass elected officials, from President Joe Biden to Senator Ted Cruz, on a regular basis. In the wake of this, there has been an appalling rise in anti-Semitism, including slurs, threats, and violence against people of Jewish heritage. Legacy News Media has covered this rise in anti-Semitism, but also balances that with coverage of the protests. Replace anti-Semitism with racism or homophobia, and the resultant coverage would be dramatically different. The other favorite target of the professional left-wing protesters is climate change. Based on the belief that the actions of humans can somehow alter the forces of nature, climate change has become the excuse for one of the largest expansions in history of government intrusion into the daily lives of every American. Even the Congressional Baseball Game, an annual charitable event in which Republicans and Democrats compete on the diamond, was not immune to the left's protest culture. The recent contest was interrupted by both pro-Palestinian protesters and radical Greens. Here in Penns Woods, the left-wing protest culture is alive and well. Funding for school choice options has become a key issue in the state budget debate currently unfolding under the Capitol Dome. It is a core component of left-wing orthodoxy that no education tax dollars should be spent on anything outside of union-controlled public schools. The left's position is so radical, they're willing to trap minority students in the most underperforming schools rather than give them the freedom to select an option that would most position them for success. Since you can't make a cogent argument for that, the left does what it always does: protest. They descended on the offices of Senate Republican leaders. A spokesman for Senate Republicans rightfully pointed out the tactic was the least likely one to change anyone's mind. Left-wing radicals have also protested outside of legislative fundraisers, invaded a luncheon meeting of the Pennsylvania Press Club, and even journeyed to New York City during Pennsylvania Society to protest the funding of conservative causes by billionaire Jeffrey Yaws. They did not, for some reason, protest the funding of left-wing causes by George Soros. Over the coming months, the professional protesters of the left will have many more opportunities to take to the streets, oblivious to the fact that their tactics more often than not galvanize people against their causes. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WFRJ-FM in Windber, WROV-FM in Dubois, along with WVMM-FM in Grantham, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.